I'm Gareth Armstrong, and you're listening to a Razor's Edge podcast. In this series, we're talking about how to build a sales team in an entrepreneurial business. Across from me is Alon Ray, CEO of RaiseCorp, and we're picking his brain because him and his team have been helping businesses grow and scale for the last 20 years. And not only has he helped other businesses, but he's had to build a sales team in his own business, and he's got it down to a fairly fine art. Well, I think so anyway, based on all the information that we've discussed up to this point. This is our 10th episode. We have one more to go, but let's jump into this one where we are talking you need to manage them.
Yeah, so you can have a well-trained, aligned, incredible sales team who can sell. But anyone who's tried to manage salespeople knows it's like managing cats.
Cats.
They have minds of their own. They're generally rebellious. Good salespeople are creative in the ways that they ensure that they close a deal. So they're creative. They are charming. They tend to get their own way. And trying to manage people with those qualities is particularly difficult. So you have to have very strong systems in place and processes in place to ensure that you do that properly. And if you don't do that properly, it becomes chaotic and it actually disintegrates.
It feels like half the battle of this management thing that we're now going to be discussing today has been won because there's contracts in place, because there are certain expectations that have been created, because we've spoken about targets, and because all this training has happened. It feels like it shouldn't be too much of a big thing to have to get your arms around because of all of those things that are in place. But we're still talking about a breed of person that's a little bit different, it seems.
I'm going to make one of those statements where, you know, some of my best friends are salespeople. So, you know, I'm not being, you know, salesist. salespeople are generally incredibly bad at admin. They're bad administratively. And that becomes problematic in an organization that's trying to keep history and continuity. So what we're actually trying to manage here is not the salespeople, but the information that they have. And to ensure that there is continuity and there is process that's being followed. And those salespeople who might be less professional, who are on their journey to becoming more professional, by creating a strongly managed environment helps them to build sales discipline in the sense that you know that you've got a pipeline and you're managing a pipeline and you're managing how many people are coming into your pipeline, how many people you're moving through the process. So, sales management is a critical, critical part of sales success.
So the first thing that we need to know about managing a sales team in an entrepreneurial business is that we're dealing with people that, by and large, are going to be administratively frustrating.
Yes. Unsound.
Where do we begin?
For me, it's the sales meeting. It's not that administratively tough, but it creates a rhythmic requirement for the salesperson to express information to you as the sales manager.
When does this happen?
Well, for us, it happens every Monday, but every organization is different, but it's every Monday. And the important thing is that it's rhythmic, it's agendaed, and that it happens.
And it also sounds like it has to have some kind of opportunity to force the salesperson to express.
Correct.
It can't just be the sales manager speaking. That's not the purpose.
Yeah, it's not a rah-rah meeting. It could be. You could use it to rah-rah your team, but it's very much around, okay, Gareth, what happened last week? Tell me about the last week. And our agendas are quite sophisticated. I won't go too much into that. But it could be as simple as, how many meetings did you have last week? Who did you meet with? What issues did you have?
Yeah, here were your targets. Let's assess against that.
Correct. And then what are your commitments for next week?
Does this occur in front of everyone?
Correct.
So there is accountability in front of everyone.
Yes. So our environment right now is on Teams because our sales team is dispersed across the country. But if you are in one physical environment, I would strongly suggest that it's in a meeting room, in a boardroom, and you are diligent about having it at the same time every single week with whether it's one person or 10 people, that you have that every single week and move through it one by one through the meeting.
Okay, so in person where possible, rhythmic, but structured as well. I know you said you don't want to go into the agenda too much, but can you touch on maybe kind of three or four major components that need to be spoken about?
Yeah, so what happened last week? I met with A, B, C, and D. What's hot is an 80% chance of closing. So, you know, you want to make sure that you are managing that as a sales manager to ensure that you can help close the 80%ers. So what you need to be thinking when they're talking about the 80% probability of closing is, how can I assist to make it 100%? What's in the way? Any issues that they experienced in the last week? And then what we add to our agenda is, how did I improve my sales technique in the last week? You know, what did I do in terms of, what did I watch? What did I read? And they share a little bit about that. So you'll often see that somebody's saying, I just started reading this book, the sales book. And then I'll ask the question, is it a good one? Is it a bad one? And, you know, they say, no, it's a good one. And then you'll see everyone pull out their pen or start typing the name of the book, and to ensure that they also get a chance to read that. And then the important thing as well is that if there are people who are not salespeople, for example, sales administrators or key accounts managers, that they're also in the same meeting. In our environment, we've got proposal writers also in the same meeting, so they also express what's coming out in the next week, what issues that they are having. And we also talk about what they won and what they lost.
Mm.
And it's important to talk about what you lost. And A, to record it, but to try and understand why. So why did we lose it? A big part of our culture is to send an email to the client or potential client that we lost the bid to, and ask why. What did we do wrong? How can we improve for the next time? Not everyone responds, but we take that information, we bring it in, and that information comes into the sales meeting as well. So we're constantly learning about how we are able to improve our process. And if somebody's picked up something that we've done wrong, you know, everyone learns from it.
So that's the sales meeting. It's in person where possible. It's agendaed and it's rhythmic. So that's an essential way that you begin to manage these administratively challenged individuals. Where do we go from there?
Well, then it's the CRM system. So CRM, customer relationship management. And there are many free systems. There are paid for environments such as Salesforce.com or Zoho. You'll definitely find a CRM system. You know, we used Excel even as a CRM system up front. We built an Excel spreadsheet and we used that. You need to make sure that you just use what is appropriate for your budget and for your size at the time, and make sure you keep evolving that. The CRM is really important, and it's actually a big part of the sales meeting.
Oh, the sales meeting itself. Okay.
You will see, for example, our sales manager, when we're in the meeting, will be talking to one of the salespeople. It's called him Gareth. So Gareth, how was the last week? And Gareth will say, I met company A last week. And the sales manager will say, no, you didn't. And Gareth will say, no, I did. And the sales manager will say, no, you didn't. And there'll be this moment between the two. And Gareth will say, I did. No, you didn't. It's not in the CRM system. And if it's not in the CRM system, it didn't happen. And then Gareth realizes what was going down and says, oh, sorry, I'll put it in. And then the sales manager says, yeah, I'm waiting.
yeah, in that moment.
Yeah. That's the level of discipline that you want around the CRM system. So this is not just to ensure that you are disciplined. It's not just for the sake of disciplining your sales team.
Well, I think about the targets that we spoke about in previous episodes. I think about the ISP, which you mentioned in previous episodes. So it's not just about that.
No, it's not just about recording what happened. It's also around creating history. So let me give you an example. Let's say I got in a client and I would say to the sales manager, I found a new potential client here. Is anyone working on it? And they'll say, Gareth's working on it. It's in Gareth's name. Then I'd ask, when last did Gareth actually communicate with this client? Go back into the CRM system and say, a year ago. Well, Gareth hasn't been working it.
No, Gareth doesn't really seem interested.
Yeah, Gareth's not working it. Because Gareth didn't record anything around communicating with that client for the last year or potential client for the last year. So it now becomes open for me to actually sell to that environment.
It's joined the pot.
It's joined the pot. And actually in our contracting, we say that if you haven't worked a client for 3 months, it actually becomes open for then to be distributed. And after 6 months, it is open for distribution. So the 3 to 6 months is, you know, because perhaps the client said, call me in 3 months' time. But after 6 months or a year, depending on your organization and your sales cycle, you can then open that up for now that people aren't hoarding clients just because they called them once.
Yeah. And that should be recorded in the CRM anyway, which is they told me to call them in 3 months' time.
Correct. Yeah. So that recordal becomes very, very important. And then also what happens is that you will have a situation where you are, a salesperson might leave and you're handing over that client to somebody else, and all the history of who you spoke to, when you spoke to, what was said is in the CRM system. So the new individual can pick up that client a lot easier because everything was recorded. So it has huge benefit for the organization, both from a management and from a continuity perspective.
Okay, so we've spoken about agendered sales meetings, and then we've also now spoken about a CRM as a tool. What else is there?
If your approach is to manage your salespeople, then you effectively tell them what to do and you manage that outcome. If your approach is to make sure that your sales team are managed and successful, then you need to see yourself as an enabling force in the sales department or the sales function. And if you're an enabling force, that means that you need to be metaphorically the person in front of your salespeople chopping down bushes to ensure that their path is made for them. If they are having difficulties, understanding those difficulties and trying to assist them to overcome those difficulties. And that's done through a one-on-one meeting every single month. Now, different organizations might have different lengths to this one-on-one meeting. It could be half an hour, it could be an hour, it could even be longer. If you're a small business with one or two salespeople that's beginning to scale, then perhaps one hour is the right amount of time. And in that meeting, your approach is, okay, how are we doing on the targets? Where are you experiencing challenges? How can I assist? And then to work with the salesperson to help them think through their challenges, give them ideas, support them, etc. It also is an opportunity for you to get feedback, because often the salespeople are the greatest source of market feedback. So you are also getting some benefit from this, not just in terms of additional sales, but also market intelligence as to, well, we're competing against competitor A, B, C, and D, and this is how they're approaching it. This is their pricing structure. The clients seem to be asking for this again and again and again.
And so interesting, if you have a team of, say, six, and four of the six are saying the same thing, then you definitely know, and we spoke about this in a previous episode, that maybe there's some training material, training content that needs to be added. But again, we spoke about that in a previous episode.
Yeah. And that's also part of, exactly part of that discussion, is where have you got deficits in knowledge? If I can just plug that deficit in the meeting, oh no, you just do this, this, and this. Let me just show you on a piece of paper. If I can close that deficit in the meeting, I do it there. But if it requires something more intensive, then it's back to training. And that training can be also external. It doesn't necessarily need to be internal as well. The one-on-one meetings need to be rhythmic, monthly, and also agendaed. And agendaed in a light way. What's happening? How are we doing towards our targets? What are your challenges? What's the market saying? And general. Those would be very high-level agenda items, and of course you can adapt it according to your specific needs. If you don't put that into the diary of the salesperson, it won't happen. So the way that we try and enforce that is through a first Monday of every month at 10 o'clock, that kind of scheduling.
So just to confirm, are you saying that you currently are sitting one-on-one with every person in the sales team that is currently here at Raise Corp, including the sales manager, or is the sales manager doing these one-on-ones?
At the stage that Raise Corp's in right now, I'm just having the one-on-one with the sales manager. But he is having the one-on-ones with all his team. And that's in his schedule. So it's quite, and we've got quite a big sales team. And so he's actually not, that's not actually true what I've just said, because he's got a layer below him who's got a team, and that team lead, that it's a regional sales manager, will have meetings with her team. So she's having meetings with the people who report into her. Our sales manager has got his own team that's separate to hers. He meets with her. And I meet with him.
And do the questions change then ever so slightly as you are a little bit more distant from the actual coalface, or those that are at least working on the coalface?
They do. They evolve. I think as the organization grows, so for example, when you've got my head of sales talking to their regional sales manager, the first question is, how's your team doing? How's your team target? Because it's at a team level. And then it moves into, they have their particular sales target as well. So then all our sales managers have their own target as well. And just as an aside, so do I. I commit to my sales manager. It's an interesting dynamic that I'm good for X million this year. And so he will put that into his budget, and I'm kept accountable in our one-on-ones as well with him. I keep myself accountable, but it's on there that how am I doing You can see how I'm doing because I'm in the CRM system. And I talk about actually challenges that I might be having as well, where he can help me. So it's an interesting dynamic, but what you're hearing in all these one-on-ones is lots of information is moving. Lots of knowledge is being gleaned, both from a market and from a blockers and obstacles in the system. And very importantly, you're also keeping a finger on the pulse of the mood of your sales team and of individuals.
Years and years and years ago, I worked for an organization and we would go into different operations and we found time and time again where these operations were struggling that the major reason they were struggling was because information wasn't flowing all the way from those that were at the coalface through to those that could actually make decisions to support them. It was a very interesting thing that was occurring. And that's by and large because they weren't having these kinds of discussions. Or they were having it, but it was a big group conversation, you know, once a week. And so they couldn't actually break through some of the politics that were occurring in that meeting. So one-on-ones changed that dynamic quite dramatically.
And you understand in flow code that flow code essentially is the flow of strategy through the layers of the organization to where it's executed. But flow code methodology is also about a feedback loop. So if you think about what I've just spoken about right now, I'm the CEO of Race Corp. And because of my one-on-ones and how that cascades, that information cascades down and back up, I am connected to the information on the ground. So as my sales team go out there and glean intelligence, market intelligence, product intelligence through the system, I'm connected to that information. So I can make better decisions.
How do you prevent a middle manager from preventing certain information getting through to the layers above them?
That's a very good question. So you can't actually prevent it in totality. But the way that I try and overcome that is in two ways. The first is to be in the sales meetings and to listen again, because often what came out in the one-on-ones will leak out in those sales meetings. And the second is that I'm in that sales office often, a number of times a day. And I have a relationship with the other salespeople in the other regions. So when I'm down in those regions, I will go out with them. And when you're in the car, you know, you have a chat, how's it going? And you pick up information that way. So I'm quite deliberate about that. I'm sure I don't get 100% of the information, that some is kept back. But I don't have a problem with that because your sales manager's role is also to discern what is BS, what is potential excuses that the salesperson is making in order to justify them not achieving their targets, and what is real. And so you've got to give full trust to your sales manager that they are filtering the non-BS information back up to you. Otherwise, you get all this raw data and it's not collated into patterns or sans the BS.
Yeah, I'm absolutely convinced that one-on-ones are a little bit of magic dust, actually, in all of this. Because other sales teams, other organizations might have these other things that we've described, agendaed meetings, a CRM in place. But, you know, that really is a little bit of magic dust right there. But as with all teams, they're going to be non-performers. How do we deal with them?
Yeah. So first of all, I think it's important to expect it. Because often what happens with entrepreneurs, they get so disappointed by non-performers. Because they've gone through a recruitment process, they've put in all the right interview questions, they've done all the assessments, they've really done the hard yards in terms of trying to make sure that this person is A, competent, and B, culturally aligned. And then it turns out that they are either not culturally aligned or not competent or both. And that's quite disappointing. It's an indictment on your process and an indictment on you to an extent. So, and then there's the other side to that, which is that, you know, maybe they've just had a bit of bad luck in the market. They're trying so hard and, you know, they've got the right attitude. And so when you've got the right attitude, the right cultural fit, but the wrong competence, but they still can't sell, they're not closers or whatever the case may be, it's even harder. Or if they're really, really good salespeople, but they're completely unaligned to your values and to the culture of the business, you've got a problem. Do we keep them? So you're managing that dynamic as well. And so a big part of your role as sales manager and as CEO, MD of the business, who is ultimately in charge, is of sales. Because sales should, in my opinion, report through to the CEO. Sales, marketing, and distribution. Those three need to report into the CEO. So one of the most important things that you do as sales manager or somebody that is in charge of sales is to filter out, eliminate, eradicate, manage out the non-performers or the people who are not aligned.
What's interesting is that you've described non-performance in three different ways. And I really like that a lot because these are people in an organization and they can undermine the organization in multiple different ways, not just a non-delivery of sales. And so that's a really important point. But we haven't spoken about how you actually execute. I like the word execute.
Excuse the pun.
Yeah. So how do you actually deal with a non-performer?
I think you have to have a couple of frames there. The first is legal, the legal framework. I see too often this knee-jerk reaction and you didn't hit your target, you're out of here. And then people land up in, you know, labor court, CCMA, and spend time that they could have avoided if they'd followed process correctly. So you have to have a legal approach to this. You need to remain legal within the labor laws of your country. So that means you have to know the labor laws and how that works. So it's part of your edification as a CEO or a sales manager is to understand the labor laws. The second framework is the human side, is that you need to look at it from a humanic perspective and say, this is a person. I believed in this person when I brought them in. Can I turn them around? Is there a way that I can save this individual? And so a big part of your decision making is before even the, let's call it the exit process or the performance management process starts, is an observation of that individual to try and identify any qualities in them that are showing you that they have what it takes. You're trying to look for the positive in that person. And then your role then is to try and amplify that before you even get to an exit or a performance management process. So there's even a pre-process before. I see you battling, Gareth. Like, I see you trying hard. Like, what in the one-on-ones that we spoke about earlier, like, what can we do to get you successful now? Like, how can I help you? I find that that is the cheapest way to run a sales team.
Mm.
Because you save that person and you save yourself a new interview process, a new onboarding, a new training, which is expensive.
How long? What's the time limit that you'd give them?
This is contracted because you've got targets. So the first time a target is not met, that becomes your trigger to go look. And your target should be set in a way that understands that somebody needs time to get up to speed. So you don't set the first target at a level which is unachievable. It's not good for you. It's not good for them. It's not good for anyone.
And if this doesn't sound familiar to you, that's because you haven't listened to the episode related to this specifically. So go back and listen to it. There's a lot more detail there. But sorry, Lon, please carry on.
Now you've been triggered by a non-achievement of target, and you have the one-on-one, and you have that discussion, and then you're watching their reaction, their action, what they do. Are they embracing how you're trying to support them? Or they're continuing to use excuses and or are lazy or not aligning to the culture. Like, and even in a cultural thing, often if you just reflect to that individual, you know, it seems like you're not getting along with the team. It seems like you are, and I'm quite direct. I mean, maybe that's not your style, but, you know, it seems like you are sucking up a lot of the energy in this room. I've been known to say things like that.
But it seems like in a way that still is talking to the human.
Yes.
Because that's what we're talking about here, a human approach.
At an adult-to-adult level.
Yeah.
There's two adults having a conversation, not talking down to that person, just person-to-person at an equal level. This is what I'm observing, what's going on. And in your mind, you're asking, are you changeable in terms of aligning to the culture or the values, or are you unchangeable? Are you changeable in terms of starting to perform, or are you unchangeable? Is this just a timing issue? You're trying to make that person win. So you're having that direct conversation. Now you go into the second target not being achieved. And so now you go into the performance management stage. And that is through whatever mechanisms are the right mechanisms, from written warnings to, you know, where you engage the person to help them still succeed. Even right through the performance management process, you are trying to turn that person around.
How do you avoid it becoming one big emotional thing?
It's hard. I wish I could say, you know, by being professional and all that, but it's really, really hard to do that, because if I'm actually criticizing you, I'm saying, you know, you suck up all the oxygen in the room, or I'm saying to you, you can't sell. That's hard from an ego perspective for another person to hear. So the best way to do it is the delivery, and maybe you sucking up all the oxygen in the room is not the right way to do that, and maybe there's a softer way to do that, and maybe there's a way to be more encouraging. It's the delivery of how you're talking to that person.
But there's something more here for me, which is eventually people start reverting into emotion. So someone might cry, someone might protest in a particular kind of way.
You get that. You get anger, you get crying, you get silence, you get indifference. There's a lot of responses to these kinds of meetings. And I have to say that from my experience, I'm totally inexperienced, because what I predict is the way that you will react is very often not the way that you react. And I'm often actually pleasantly surprised that when you have an adult conversation, say, listen, Gareth, you're not performing. I want you to perform. I want to help you. You use a lot of excuses. What's going on? Is there something going on at home? Or what's going on here that has changed? Because when you first joined Race Corp, you were like this. And now something else is happening. And then you got feedback, and this is a part of the feedback. You know, I feel that you never give me enough attention here, or, you know, it's hard to sell, or, you know, and then you listen to how they respond to that. And once again, you're making a decision whether the person is, you're just using excuses, or there's some legitimate reason why they're not getting to perform. And once again, I reiterate, your role is to cut down the bushes for them, to help them become successful. I've had many a time people in performance management, not just in sales, by the way, but in other roles as well, where they've completely done a 180 degree and they've been with Rays Corp for, you know, 10 years since that time, and have become actually a beacon of light around performance in their role. So you're trying to save those, but you can't save them all. And so there is a point where the numbers speak, and you have to have, and I'm going to use this word, the courage to exit that person, because you follow the legal framework, you followed the humanic framework, and now you have to look after the organization. You cannot have Deadwood earning a salary, not performing, not paying their own way in the organization. And so now you go through the exit process, and that is quite prescribed by the labor law.
This was a long conversation, I mean, a long podcast. It really speaks to the importance of managing people, but then also managing people using tools and processes. Do you have a final little bit of insight from all of your experience, particularly when it comes to assisting other entrepreneurs in developing their management structures or themselves as managers, that you can share just in conclusion?
Yeah, I don't want this to be all about how to become a good manager, but I will say this: having the courage to manage and lead your sales team properly is the cheapest tool to having a successful sales team. If you, and I keep using that word courage, you can hear I use courage, because often what I find with people who are managing salespeople is they don't like the conflict that comes from managing. They don't like the grinding between the two individuals in terms of one's not performing and you want them to perform. One person's not aligning and you want them to align. So it's all very well to go back to your fellow managers and say, oh, Gareth's not aligned. But the question is, what are you doing about it? And that to me is the key to having a healthy sales team, is putting in the management structures and having the courage to manage.
And that's the voice of Alon Rays, CEO of Rays Corp. This has been a Razor's Edge podcast. And remember, go and follow Rays Corp on your favorite social media platforms, where you will be able to receive notifications about our final episode in this series. Alternatively, go to racecorp.com, where you can sign up for notifications there as well. I'm Gareth Armstrong, and Alon and I will see you in that final episode.